Hi there, beautiful people. Welcome to another episode of the Fonteca Junction Real Talk. And I'm here joining the studio as usual by the one and only Big Resh. I won't be calling him Big Resh now.
Yeah.
Going
yeah.
Big Resh, Resh, what's good, bro?
Yeah, everything is good. Everything is good. Very interesting weekend we had. And first off, I'm just going to commiserate with the Odukoya family, because Pastor Odukoya was finally laid to rest because of the weekend.
Yeah.
And it was a very, I can't call it somber moment. It was a very, for me, it was bittersweet, because people celebrated him like he would celebrate.
Yeah.
The life of, anyone that dies, that he knows that, I've lived a life, and all that, and he couldn't have been any other way with, Pastor Taiwo Odukoya. And it was a very good ceremony for him. And did I tell you that it was when I went to the Fountain of Life, Idukpeju, many years ago? That's when I really started to vibe church.
Mm.
The concept of church.
Was that when Wild Bimbo was, was ministering?
I was young.
She made church something.
Funny enough, I wasn't a fan of Bimbo Odukoya like that.
Mm.
I just like Pastor Taiwo for his leadership teachings, and the way he carries himself, the protocols around him, he made it look cool, and he's a very cerebral person.
Mm.
He's a people person, really. And he's good people, he, anytime that he preaches, I just vibe with him. And he used to share business articles, leadership articles. I think it was This Day or business magazine. Big business news and all. So he used to share, weekly, nuggets or weekly, articles on leadership. About the state of the nation, stuff like that and all. He was his own ministry was cut from another clothes, and he did it his own way, and it was something that I really, really vibe with.
We really want to commiserate with the family and friends of the dearly departed Taiwo Odukoya.
Yeah.
Life well lived and well celebrated as well.
He was a man of many challenges. Lost his first wife, in the plane.
Mm.
And then lost the second one to cancer.
Yeah.
And
I lost his twin as well.
Yeah, and he lost his twin.
All in the same, similar space of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can imagine what it's like for his daughter, because I saw a clip where she ministered during the funeral. What would I call it? Funeral, the rite of service.
Yeah.
Service of songs, and she's a really good minister. Sang that song so well.
She did a song that was viral now.
Interesting. It was a really strong, heartfelt ministration, just giving all the glory to God, regardless of everything that has happened. And it was really tough for her, But we pray for God's strength for her and for the family to bear the fortitude to bear this loss as well.
Yeah.
On the junction today, we're going to be chopping it up on a couple of things, both home and abroad. But I'm gonna just quickly touch on something very quickly. Last week, I know you sent me a link, a basketballer, an NBA basketballer, Noah Niles. I was in an interview, and it seems to be throwing some shades at the NBA, because for some reason, Americans refer to the NBA winner as champions of the world, world champions. And Noah Niles was like, champions of what? the NBA is good. He has one of the best players in the NBA, but that doesn't make an NBA champion the champion of the world.
Yeah.
And it seems like that has been proven.
this they've period. Kicked them out. They've kicked
the
them
US
out.
Basketball team. Are
funny enough,
out.
Funny enough, Canada has never really won any medal.
Yeah.
Ever before, this is their first medal. You know, and they got uprooted. You know, and I think the Noah Lyles guy, I think he's vindicated now.
Yeah.
That was what he was trying to say. Like, guys, can we slow our roll? Like, can we just pipe it down? Like, you know, more so, the American team, those are not their best players.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's also part of the arrogance, you know, America displays, like, okay, let's just bring these new guys, you know, just go and
let them represent the country in FIBA.
You know, Draymond Green, you know, that one that has big mouths. He was telling them, go, guys. Yeah, go, beat them. They didn't even get any medals. They didn't have any medals. Kevin Durant, too, was throwing shade at Noah Lyles, like, ah, you sure? Are you serious? Everything. They don't show them now. Like, I think the world has come of age, you know, when it comes to this basketball, you know, and all. And I think somebody was comparing them to the 92 Dream Team, you know. And that 92 Dream Team were the best of the best of the best in the NBA. I mean, you had the likes of Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, you know. I mean, some of the best guys, you know, and Charles Barkley, you know, that they were pummeling the rest of the world. Like, you know, I saw it eventually because I wasn't, you know, I saw it eventually and it was, I think before then, the US was getting beaten, you know, because they don't showcase their best players. They used to send college guys to go and play. So they were like, at that time, they were always saying, like, maybe the US is not that good and all.
Yeah.
So that's why the Michael Jordan just went. You know, he beat anybody blue black. You know, so yeah. So, I mean, at this point now, I mean, now many years later, maybe like 3 decades later, you still expect the world to be the same. They would have grown too now. A lot of, what's it called, advancements in, you know, their own, what's it called, basketball, you know, program too and all that. So you can't just send anybody now.
Yeah, and I think it's technically wrong for the NBA to refer to the champions of the NBA tournament as world champions.
Yeah,
technically it's wrong. Yeah, you can say, just like in football sense, right? When you look at European football, the UEFA Champions League,
you want to
believe that the best of the best are playing in Europe.
Yeah, but it's an assumption.
Yeah, but you can't say whoever wins the Champions League is the champion of the world.
Yeah,
right.
Messi still cried his eyes out until he won the World Cup.
So you know you've got to compete with other player teams in other countries.
It's just typical
show.
Arrogance.
Yeah, that's actually the arrogance we're talking about. You assume because your league is the most developed and the most advanced.
Yeah.
And someone, I don't know how true it is, someone noted that even in the NBA, the rules of engagements when you're playing in the NBA,
sometimes
it gives room for some things that when you play proper international basketball, they will penalize you for it and you won't get away with it. You know, and it's like, so, you know, you're not... NBA is not even really the true test of what, you know, the international standard of basketball is.
Yeah, that's why LeBron James is playing 20 years now. It should be the soft league now. Nobody, Stephen A. Smith will say, like, if you come close as even as passing a gas, you know, close to one of their favorite players, they will give you foul call. Like, you know, yeah, so the NBA is kind of soft, you know. And they need to kind of, you know, get their acts together and stop acting like crybabies, you know, like, you know, everybody's...
And, you know, it's just similar to those movies when you watch Hollywood movies.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like,
exactly.
And it's like, when something's about to happen in America, they just assume it's the rest of the world.
In New York.
You don't say, oh, wow, we're going to save the world, bro. It's always in New York or like Los Angeles, this can happen. How do you assume they're trying to save the world because of that?
They'll do graphics of New York desolate. You now see the hero. You now see the superhero trying to save the world.
Bro, you're trying to save New York, not the world. Come on. Yeah, America needs to really get up their high horse. It's really getting too high at this point.
Yeah.
Let's jump right into the topic of the day. Finally, in Lagos State, the citizens of Lagos can breathe a sigh of relief. We can breathe now from traffic gridlock and all kinds of jams because the blue rail line has finally kicked off the Lagos State Governor Babajide Sanwo-Olu flagged off operations of the Blue Rail Line. I think it was last Monday. So apparently this rail system will, for this first phase, will transport people from the Mile 2 axis towards Marina. I think there's plans for a second phase to stretch to a further distance, but you know, we don't know when that one's going to kick in because construction is ongoing. But I think this one is a good one. Clips have been emerging online, you know, of Lagosians just bombarding the rail. Like, I'm even beginning to wonder whether people are just entering the rail just for entering sake, or if they really have where they're going to. Because I'm like, you guys, this is not BRT. I looked at the clip and I'm like, people who are standing in the rail are more than people who are sitting. This train they carry standing too.
If looking at the faces of the guys in the on the train, looking at their faces and all, if you were someone that is very, very, I mean, retrospective and introspective, you know, if you're someone that really thinks a lot, that smile on people's faces says a lot about, I mean, how accommodating Nigerians can be, I mean, when it comes to the excesses of their government. I mean, what the people are asking for is the barest minimum, you know. And as the government has been so irresponsible, even as they have been so removed, you know, from what is happening, you know, to the people, you know, whenever they still do something that doesn't make sense to me, to be sincere with you, doesn't make sense to me at all, because we are supposed to be like 10 times ahead of what we're doing now. The trains are refurbished, you put them on the road, you know, and all, and then you now start showing, I mean, their pictures or their videos to people, telling them, yeah, look at what we have done for them and all. They're not doing anything for anybody. They're supposed to be serving the people and all. And what I'm going to charge the government to do is do more. You are not even close to what you're supposed to be doing at all. So I don't think that anybody should be clapping for, I mean, Sanwo-Olu. Sanwo-Olu, to me, I feel like his feet has not really been put to the fire enough, really. And he showed when he almost lost, you know, the his rerun. He showed when he almost lost his rerun. Then
his re-election.
Somebody that is not supposed to even be. Somebody that is not supposed to even be close to, I mean, challenging him not at all. He showed that the people were tired of him, Sanwo-Olu, you know, and all. And he showed that the people were tired of the government, you know, that is running things in Lagos. You know, even the central, we know what happened in the central anyway, you know. So for me, I think the government should do more, and the government should kind of, you know, they should live above all this mediocrity that we're always doing. You know, when we do we will construct one bus stop and then we'll carry the whole press to that bus stop, and then everybody is celebrating and all and everything. The Yaba stuff that they've been doing since, I don't know for how long that's going to last.
That's been there like that.
You see the way they walk there, you realize that these guys are not really doing anything. You know, I don't really know what they're even waiting for to begin with and all. And it's not like maybe the state is not really generating as much money, you know, than the rest of the country and all that. You know, so for me, I'm not impressed. You know, I mean, good for the people that are able to ply that place, you know, what have you. But for me, I'm not impressed.
Yeah, really. Yeah. And I mean, the truth is that I'm caught in between the middle of giving the government its flowers and also saying, and also drawing their ears and saying, listen, while we want to appreciate the fact that at least one project has finally seen the light of day in Lagos State, we also want to look at expectation versus reality and compare. This blue rail line has been in the conversation for almost 14 years. A project that was built to have been concluded in 3 years. And this is just a phase one that they've concluded. We have a phase two that we only God knows when they will be able to do.
Yeah.
Right? The entire stretch was meant to have been done in 3 years. It's taking three administrations to deliver
it. It's bull crap now.
And we even still have concerns in terms of how is it going to be maintained, right? We saw how the BRT system was when they introduced the BRT system, it looked good. But in 2 to 3 years, it became an overrun.
Everything is messed up. No cooling system. And then, it's more like, what's it called? The regular
downfall. Yeah. And then we started looking at how to privatize the BRT system.
So is that what we're supposed to be clapping for?
You know, so, it's a struggle. Now, on the side of the people who are riding these trains, they probably will be breathing a sigh of relief because they've been used to the struggle of, you know, hustling and busting to enter bus to go to where they're going. And to them, giving them a real line is like, you're finally easing my troubles.
I think it's the guy that wants to kill the chicken. You know, you keep pulling, what's it called?
His feathers.
The feathers away, and then you give him corn. Keep pulling the feathers away. Yeah,
word.
Corn,
word.
Know, until the old feathers removed, and then the thing, what's it called? Get exposed, you know, and then maybe the weather kills him. That's what they are doing to us in this part of the world. And I think, I don't know really, but for me, I'm not impressed with this Congolese government at all. Put it out there. I'm not impressed, seriously.
They've got the rail line also coming up though.
Yeah.
The red rail line as well.
Okay.
Also, according to someone, they are pushing to complete that soon. So the thing is, and it's a good master plan, right? They've got a good master plan for road transportation and, you know, even the marine transportation in Lagos. But it's a plan that they've been looking at since maybe 2015 or 2013. You know, in fact, way back 2009, actually, right? And the speed of deployment or implementation of this plan is actually really, really slow. And you are giving people the room to actually, just like what we're doing right now, where you finally, you know, deployed or concluded a project. But instead of us to be giving you rounds of applause, we're looking at you and saying, after how many years? You should have done this a long time ago, and we should have been moving on or looking forward to the next big thing. So we need to really increase the pace of development, even as Lagos is the pace setter for Nigeria. Right, and this is Lagos we're talking about, which is like the hub of development. You know, what do we say about the other states that are still so far behind?
Until we begin to, what's it called, expect more of ourselves, until we begin to ask more of our government, trust me, they will keep taking us for a ride, because this project that everybody is, celebrating and losing their minds over is ridiculous. This is like maybe like everyday life, you know, in a developed nation. It's everyday life, you know. It is the life that you're supposed to give to the people to even begin with and all. And then you expect people, and then look at the way they pack themselves like sardine when they were jumping in there.
Nigerians need to also give themselves some respect.
That's the thing.
I was asking. Are you sure these guys really want to enter train to go somewhere? For entering sake?
That's what I'm saying. It's more like someone that hasn't really, that's not seen anything good in life. You now give them bicycle. I'll be like, yes.
Wild.
I know. I mean, the government needs to do better, really. It's ridiculous. Me, I'm not impressed. From the national to the, down to the states, down to the local, you know, all of them, their feet needs to be put to the fire, really.
Yeah, I want to encourage the Lagos government to, you know, keep doing, do better, right? We need to applaud at the end of the day that you finally brought something home.
We applaud.
However, there is still so much more left to be desired. If we're being honest, the speed of development is too slow. We need to pick up the pace. Like you rightly said, I was trying to connect the island over the weekend, and I was like, okay, let me just try to take the railway route, since it's a route that everyone takes now. Only to find out that the road has been blocked. They are constructing the Apapa road that leads to Ingbo that would have taken that one to be blocked. They are constructing. They've been constructing that place for 4 years. I say, let me take Yaba, the Murutala Mohammed Way, the bridge there, linking from Yaba to the other side.
That one has been constructing.
I'm like, come on, man. All the alternate routes people can take. Even the Cole Bridge that they said they finally they blocked a portion of that place to their constructing. So let's be honest here. While we want to be able to encourage the government and say, oh, good job for these things that they've done, there's still so much they need to really do. They need to pick up the pace and stop using the same projects to pad budgets every year, you know, so that they can be collecting money. Because that's what I think that they are doing. They represent all these budgets year in, year out, you know, to inflate the bill and they delay the
implementation of this project. And all these Niger Delta area, those places are supposed to be competing with some of the best cities in the world.
I agree.
Based on the money that they or the revenue they generate and all. But we're just bad people. We're just ridiculous people. And until we begin to expect more of ourselves, that's when and then if you see these guys, you know, if you see their houses, if you see where they live and all and everything, and it is the ridiculousness, you know, that comes with it. La Beta Pass, my neighbor, you know, and use government money, government that is supposed to more revenue that is supposed to generate, you know, to make people's life better. You now use it to build a good house for yourself.
Yeah.
And then in front of your house is potholes, and then you don't mind using big jeep.
You know this thing just reminded me of a clip I saw during the week. If an African leader, I can't recall the country now, Raila Odinga, you know, he was in the summit and he was trying to crack a joke. He said the Nigerian minister went abroad, I think it was maybe Saudi Arabia or some other country, and then he met his counterpart, right? And the counterpart was showing him around the country, right? Showed him some very lovely bridges, some nice overhead infrastructure, and the Nigerian minister was like, wow, great, that's amazing. Then his counterpart in that country took him to his house, right? And then the house was really, really lovely, really nice. The Nigerian minister was, you know, impressed, and he asked the man that, wow, how are you able to accomplish all this? Your home is very lovely. Then the man took the minister to the edge of the house, the balcony, and overstretching the road. And then he showed him all the lovely bridges and trains and rail system that I showed him earlier. He said, you see that? He said, that is 90% government money. Yeah, that was standing, the house, 10%. Wow, lovely. Okay. So later on, that guy visited Nigeria, and the same Nigerian minister took him around, showed him some roads that were not so great, showed him some bridges that were not so great. Then when they took him to the home after the tour, the man saw the palatial mansion, saw lovely things in the house, and the minister was like, my guy, how were you able to achieve all this?
That
the man said, that road that I showed you there, that is 0%. This house, 100% government money. And everyone laughed and said, and it was instructive, really, to show that.
Can you imagine Raila Odinga is from where? From where now?
I think it's Senegal or somebody else, making fun of the Nigerian leader.
But it shows how far, it shows the what's it called, the depth of, I mean, ridiculousness and
greed,
the depth of
greed,
degradation that
yeah,
we have
greed
in this
and
part of the world. And the other leaders are now saying, like, guys,
it's too
we
much.
Need to be calling you out now.
Your own is too much.
You know, it's ridiculous.
Your own is too much. Ridiculous. We need to do better. Very quickly, before we go on break, a clip was going viral recently. Kiki, a popular comedian and Instagram skit maker, was on a show, and she made a comment when she said she likes to split the bill on the house rent with her husband. And her belief is that, you know what, my husband, on my birthday, he can take me out to Paris, take me out to, you know, Venice, spoil me, spend money on me, that's fine. But if I'm living in a house with my husband and we have bills to pay, you know, I believe I should take responsibility and contribute towards that as well, that expense. And moreover, if I do that, if by adventure there are any issues or arguments, my husband will not just wake up and tell me, leave my house, kick me out of the house, because I mean, I'm a joint shareholder in terms of putting this place together, so I have a stake as well.
Yeah,
that has drawn several controversies or several remarks, and some celebrities, female celebrities, have said outrightly, I'm not going to be splitting bills with any man. If I get married, that is fully on you. House rent, school fees, and all that. That's your job as a man. I'm no cap. I'm not jumping on that wavelength.
Yeah.
What do you think about this?
Yeah, number one, I don't know why she said I think the way I kind of find my was like a bit of comma, yeah, is where she said whenever the guy is ready to push her out, you know, and all. Why are you thinking like that, really? That's my question. And then musical number two, I think for me, I think it's always good when there is a very good understanding between the partners, you know, and all. And one of the things that I'm always looking for people to cultivate, really, is not to get into something that looks like a contractual terms and condition, you know, and all. You know, I mean, let everybody be upward mobile. I mean, doing, you know, and all. I mean, hardworking, you know, try to, you know, I mean, hold your own when it comes to, I mean, your career, what have you, and all, and everything, you know. But when it comes to the management of the confines, you know, that you guys, and I think that these things should just be natural, really. I don't know why there has to be.
But you know, I hear you when you say it has to be natural, right? But you know, again, anything that human beings are involved, we have a way of corrupting it. And that's why some people are saying, if I'm going into a marriage situation with someone, let things be clear in black and white.
Hey, but you see,
let us be clear of what you are bringing now, in and what I'm bringing
now,
in.
Now, okay.
Because human beings have a way of just twisting things when push comes to shove.
Now, this is the situation, really. I mean, if the parties, and you see, I'm not saying this, I'm saying it with all sense of responsibility. If I say natural, I'm saying like I said, both parties should hold their own down, you know, when it comes to career, their work and all and everything. You know, what do you want for yourselves, you know, when it comes to maybe procreating, making babies, you know, I mean, going, and then career wise you know, what are you guys looking at, you know, creating, when it comes to maybe moving, you know, to a notch higher, you know, maybe if you're a career person, you want to set up your own business, you know, you want to grow from there too, and all stuff like that and all.
Yeah,
I think all those things should should be something that both parties are willing to help with, you know, and all. And when it comes to the home front as well, I really don't
okay, so you have the opinion that it's fine as a man to take the bills, take responsibility for paying the bills in the house, the rent and all that, school fees, blah blah blah, and then, you know, the woman, it's optional, right?
No, what I'm saying is, you see, a woman that cares, and a woman that, I mean, loves whoever they're with, you know, if the relationship is developed in such a way that there is good camaraderie, there is good friendship there, you would always, and that's why I'm always like, look out for friendship, relationship first.
Yeah.
If the friendship is there, you know what friends do? They look out for one another.
Yeah,
you know, and he's always watching, or she's always watching your back and all, and that is the way it should be. But in this situation where it's like, okay, we are going into it, okay, how much are you bringing, how much am I, sometimes it could also mean that it's the lady that is earning more than the guy, you know. Okay. And all. I mean, how would you cut this thing? And some guys too, I mean, I've heard it over and again, like, some guys don't like it, they still feel that they have to give the highest.
You don't kill yourself.
Yeah.
What do you say about men? So what do you say about women who are flat out making it clear, if I get married today, I'm not paying rent, I'm not paying school fees, I'm not doing another thing. My husband should be the one taking that responsibility. Yes, there are women who have made that clear.
Well, that's, you see, and then some men too like it like that.
Fine.
Yeah, some men too like it like that, really, you know. Yeah, but for me, I don't really think I'm going to be looking out for people like that, really. Because I mean, if it is like that, then that means there is already selfishness. There is selfishness in that
involved. Yeah, I agree with you.
So I'm not looking for.
And I think you summed up perfectly, which is there has to be that camaraderie, that friendship in marriage that makes you naturally want to support. I mean, I can't imagine you say you marry someone you love, and then the guy is killing himself to pay school fees, pay rent, pay this, pay and medical, you are spending your money and saying that your money is your money. My other money is our money. No, that's witchcraft. That's witchcraft. Yeah, we need to go on a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to be discussing the Obama controversy. a lot of controversy swirling around Obama right now. What's really going on? When we come back, we're going to chop it up. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Hey, 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 it's your girl Green G, all the way from Germany. My latest single, Hochenau, featuring T. Gotta Flamspita, is officially available on all streaming platforms. Keep streaming, streaming, streaming. Also, keep listening to my guys, L.A. and Reg, at Fontaka Junction. Real talk. What's up?
If we're tough like cement, we're water don't spoil. Scratch like Joe with the crow boy.
And we are back.
Yeah, back.
Thanks for sticking with us. If you enjoy our Junction gist and banters, so you'd like to get more of it, what are you waiting for? Click on the subscribe button or the follow button. Whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Google Podcasts or Amazon, whatever platform you're listening to us from at this moment, you can click on the subscribe button, the follow button, so that you can get notifications every time we drop new episodes, and we'll be dropping them back to back.
Yeah, I think we are on about, I think, 7 or 8 platforms. Some some are even way
Farther. Yeah. We got listeners all the way from Germany, from Nigeria, from US, from Canada. So it's we global. We global.
Yeah.
We global now.
Can I get something off the chest?
Big Resh. Big Resh. That's why we call you Big Resh.
What happened to our guy now?
Who's that?
Israel at this one.
He got his ass beat.
Guy got beat.
He got his ass beat.
I've not really seen Adesanya like that before. Like, he was fighting as if he wants to run out of the ring. Like, what happened to him?
I wouldn't say something is wrong, but see, I think in athletics, really, there are some times when, you know, you think you've prepared enough, and sometimes on the day you just come up against an opponent that just, you can just tell this person is ready for you.
He was overwhelming.
Yeah, you can just tell, you know, you're not at the level to match up, and that can strike some little fear in you, really. You know, we see it all the time in football, in basketball, in tennis. You know, sometimes it just happens that day your opponent just seems ready for you.
Something about his mental strength was not there at all. It felt like he was defeated, hands down. Like, he was beating like a baby.
Ew. I wouldn't say beating like a baby. I mean, the other guy had a moment where for like 10 or 15 seconds, he, you know, had the beating of Israel.
Yeah.
He was able to land a very strong right hook and then, you know, follow up with a flurry of punches at Israel. Kudos to Israel for standing, you know, his ground. He remained on his feet. But, you know, that was essentially the sequence that, you know, tilted the match in favor of the other guy. So, it's not like Israel was pummeled throughout the game like that. Nah, not really. It was that passage of play that just seemed to swing the other guy's way majorly. Okay, so, he'll be back. I mean, nobody wins all the time. No matter how great you are, even Muhammad Ali, the great Ali, had, you know, his downtime.
Ah,
so,
Rumble, young man, you know, Rumble. Ah, that guy he was something else. He was something else. I just didn't like the latter part of his. I mean, I felt he didn't really enjoy himself. Like,
his career?
Muhammad Ali.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, he was the world greatest.
Are you sure it was the world greatest? It was PR. I mean, Ali was good, no doubt, but we've heard that guys like George Foreman and some other guys were actually just as good, if not better, but didn't enjoy the same PR that Muhammad enjoyed.
Ali's own came with the I think the guy, his oratory prowess, you know, also
did a lot
for him.
Yeah,
and I think that's what kind of makes him the greatest anyway. Because
he's got packaging. He has packaging, so he packaged himself and made himself look like one of the very best. If Muhammad Ali and Mike Tyson were to square up in the ring, who do you think would win? Both in their prime.
I think it was George Foreman. It was George Foreman that kind of gave Muhammad Ali the the most challenge. I think it was the one that they fought, what's it called? Trilla in Manila. The one they won, they took out outside of America to Africa. And it was said that his, what's it called? His staff members, they were afraid for him. They were afraid for him, like, you know? And he gave him, gave a speech to them just before he went into the ring, like why are you guys afraid? Like, if you guys are looking like this, how do you expect me to feel?
The new judge was gonna come with the heat.
But he beats Foreman too on that ring that day. It was fun. He took all the punches, he took everything, and then Foreman just ran out of gas. And then Ali just woke up, you know. And it was that iconic picture that he took, that he was looking at him on the ground, like, you know, that was what happened afterwards. It was good.
Yeah. Well, good one. We're looking forward to our Nigerian champion Israel Adesanya
coming back,
bouncing back, just like we always do as Nigerians. We bounce back.
Yeah.
Speaking of bouncing back, I don't know if this lady is gonna be able to bounce back. Sad news. A lady, Mrs. Kainde Busari, has cried out following what appears to have been an absolute robbery of her body part. Miss Kainde Busari has found out that a quack doctor, I don't know if it's going to be a quack now or an illegal doctor, actually invested her kidney 7 years ago when she enrolled in his medical center for an appendix surgery, a surgery to remove an appendix. Mrs. Borsari found out that after the operation 7 years ago at Dr. Noah Kekere's Muna Clinic and Maternity in Jos, Nigeria, she started having incessant stomach pains, and she had been going to different hospitals trying to, you know, find out what the root cause of the pains were, and they were just giving her, you know, painkillers to subside the pain. And after about 6 years of the pain not relenting, she finally went to the Jos University Teaching Hospital to get a bit of more clarity. It was in the course of the scan that was done at the teaching hospital that they found out that one of her kidneys were no longer with her. And then they traced it all the way back, because she's a woman who has had all her childbirth naturally. The only time she's gone under the knife was when she had the appendix issue. So they trace it all the way back to that surgery 7 years ago or 6 years ago, and found out after much evidence provided, the said doctor, Noah Kekere, finally admitted that he actually took away the lady's kidney. Because while that surgery was taking place then, it was typically meant to be a 1 hour operation, but it ended up lasting about 7 hours, and the woman's husband was, you know, at that point, you know, just a bit bewildered. Why would a simple appendix removal surgery take 7 hours? Unbeknownst to them, you know, that was the clandestine activity going on. Wow. I mean, how do you, I mean at this point, it's for me irreparable damages, right? Because the lady has suffered some deformities. The latest pictures that we have seen, her stomach is swollen and all that. The question is, can we now begin to look for donors to replace a lost kidney? It looks like irreparable damages to me. What does justice, or what would justice look like in this situation?
I mean, I feel very sorry for the lady. And sometimes you always ask yourself, like, how are we so wicked in this part of the world? Like, what has this lady done to this guy, you know, to get such evil and such dark, you know, treatments on her? You know, you trust a doctor to make you well. You know, you pay your money, hard-earned money, you know, to operate on you, and then you trust them with your life, you know, after the anesthetic, you know, kicks in, you know, and all, only for them to, I mean, knife you apart. and then they are harvesting, they are taking your organs without your consent. I don't know how dark that can get, really. And I think something really needs to give in this part of the world, really, you know, because we are always demanding for better government, better, you know, service, you know, better policies, you know, to make our lives better and all and everything, you know. But at the end of the day, when you look at it, you know, we still see that maybe we are not really, of which I've said it over and over again, the government that we're chasing is the boogeyman. We don't ever seem to catch that government. And at the end of the day, when you look very well, the government are actually the people. It is the people that is the government. And this guy is the poster child of how our government, you know, I mean, is a poster child of the reflection of the government that we have at this time. You know, but I mean, I'm praying that this man doesn't go scot-free. I'm praying that this man gets the fullest extent of what the law can give to him. You know, I mean, the fact that he has made this woman's life miserable, the fact that he has made this woman have to, hopefully, I pray that is not the case, that this woman would have to, what's it called, now live, you know, in pain for the rest of her life. This man needs to receive all the full extent of the law that he can get, you know, for what he has done to this woman. It is very sad.
Speaking about receiving the full extent of the law and the weight of the law, I mean, I have my reservations around justice and it being met in this kind of situation, because my belief is people like this don't work in isolation. Right? The doctor is not just going to randomly decide that they're going to take away someone's kidney or liver or whatever it is just for the sake of taking it. It's because there's a pipeline somewhere, demand, right? It's a demand somewhere, and most often than not, it's going to be demand from high places. There's a comment here on this story I saw on X that I want to read. It came from the account. I can't find it right now. I'll try and trace it later. But what the person was simply trying to say was that people like this don't act on their own, right? At the end of the day, there are some big men, right, that have requested for these body parts, and then these doctors are simply acting as suppliers. And for you to be able to find justice, it means they're going to have to uncover the entire ring of that operation, which will expose some of these politicians at the top, right? And I'm sure they don't want that. So what's most likely going to happen is that they're going to find a way to bury the case and then we'll move on. What I've also observed in recent times is that we always see the news that uncovers the travesty, but we don't get the news that shows the penalization of these actions, right? Just like the same way as the guy, I think he was Udom Emmanuel, or what's his name now, who about 2 years ago, you know, posted a fake ad,
that guy, that,
right? A fake job ad. And then the poor girl, Umoren, I think her name was Umoren, you know, went to the location of the so-called job interview only for it to be a trap. And then the guy killed her and harvested her kidneys, right? And the police was very quick to parade the guy and all that. But they're not telling us. And I remember David Ondane had done a more detailed analysis into that story
that
to say
that was the story that brought him
that
up.
Brought him up. Yeah, to say that, listen, let's not stop here. This guy is not acting in isolation. There's a certain big man somewhere in this state that is related to politicians who was calling this guy back and forth the day before the incident, on the day of the incident. Let us go and dig further to find out who was the person giving this guy instruction and who does that person work for. If we dig deep, we'll find the root of this case. There's a massive, I'm of the opinion that there's a massive human organ trafficking ring and market in Nigeria today that we are not even paying attention to. The level at which human being parts have been harvested today is at an alarming rate, and you can't tell me that there is not a link between all of these things. Someone somewhere is paying top dollar for people to present the parts of other people for reasons best known to them. I don't know what they need these human parts for, whether it's for rituals, whether they are trading it abroad as well to make money. I don't know. Just recently, we heard about a lady, a 200 level student in an institution in Edo State. You know, she had gone for night trading on the fateful day. Didn't come back that night. Her housemate, her roommate, you know, out of concern, ring the alarm. This is unusual. She should have come back today. She didn't come back. By the next day, they started a manhunt looking for her, only for them to find her in a pond by the roadside, right? By the time they pulled her out, her two eyes were missing and different parts of her body were missing. Different parts of her body were missing as well. 200 level student. This is happening inside a school environment. This will tell you how close these things are getting. People are not even making it, you know, discreet anymore. It's becoming a case of you can get kidnapped. And I mean, someone also yelled, screamed that on Twitter just some weeks ago as well. The sister was going somewhere for NYSC or whatever it is, you know, they kidnapped them. About 12 NYSC students were kidnapped. And then the next thing we're hearing is the kidnappers are telling them, make sure your family members can pay 5 million naira between now and the next 3 days. If not, we're going to kill you and sell your body parts. It's like standard stuff now. And it's real. Like, people are being kidnapped and their organs have been arrested.
Yeah.
I mean, and our police is not doing anything tangible to track down this supposed syndicate.
I think it's the level of depravity that we have in our society right now, really. And something needs to give, really. And I just feel like the question that we need to be asking ourselves is, who is willing to bail these cats, really? Who is willing to take on the responsibility of, you know, gatekeeping what is actually happening in our society? You know, I know. And until we get to, to figure out or to answer those sincere questions, I mean, we're going to be having a lot of questions. I mean, like you said, there's a lot of questions with no answers, you know, and all. And that's why I'm not too excited. I mean, I'm not too excited with the G20 meeting that these Tinubu's guys are drooling over, like, you know, as if he has saved the world from the precipice of the Third World War, you know, and all and everything.
Yeah.
The question that I'm always asking is, if we don't have a government that penalizes, you know, evil, that penalizes bad acts, that penalizes, you know, stuff, you know, that is, I mean, insecurity and the people perpetrating it and all. If we don't have a government, you know, we saw Ekweremadu now. I mean, not Ekweremadu. Ekweremadu is one of those guys too that went to UK, that went to harvest, wanted to harvest somebody else's kidney,
yeah,
but was caught in his trap, you know. And the court did justice to him and all.
Yeah.
You know. And I'm saying, like, all these things should cut across every spheres of our life. You know, if there is a system that punishes bad acts, if there is a system that punishes evil, you know, this guy should not even be taking interviews. This doctor, this Kekere doctor guy, this Noah Kekere doctor, this one is not Noah. This one hasn't come to save anybody. He has come to decimate
Let me interject with you there. So there's a... what you just said reminded me of something. So I saw a clip where he passed on Michael Ropo, you know, and
yeah,
in that clip, he was speaking about how the church needs to actually step up, because we have people who are Christians bearing Christian names, and they are perpetrating the worst kind of act. You say Nathaniel is not behaving like Nathaniel. Isaac is not behaving like Isaac. How can an Isaac be kidnapping somebody and collecting ransom? Yeah. And it just points to what you're saying about this guy. I mean, your child, as you were born to this world, your parents looked at you and believed that, you know, the birth of you was an emblem of something spiritual, something symbolic, and they named you Noah, only for you to grow up as an adult and start perpetrating this level of evil and wickedness.
Yeah, but you know, Kekere is actually small, so I guess his life is small, so that's why
the two names are contradicting Noah Kekere.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, so for me, I just feel like We need to have a government, you know, that penalizes bad acts and bad behaviors and all. What's it called? Emefiele is a poster child, you know, for what is bad in our country. We saw how that decimated family. We saw how people were stripping naked and, you know, I mean, losing their mind, you know, to collect their money at the bank after working their life off, you know, for that money and all. And they died. Some of them died eventually. Now he's crying foul. He's crying like maybe as if maybe he's being punished for something he didn't do and all and everything. Mm. And before you know it now, you realize that the case will go quiet.
Go cold.
Will go cold. And then in the next 2 years, you see him again trying to vie for office and all. If stuff like that continues, that is what, and then what's it called? That is what gives power, or that is what gives boldness to people like Noah Kekere, you know. Mm. And Noah Kekere should actually be spending the rest of his life in prison right now. That yeah. is that should be his case. He should be spending the rest of his life, because I don't know how, as a doctor, someone would entrust their life to you and then they will lay on the bed after the anesthetic kicks in, and then the only thing that you do is take it's part of their that vital
organ. That's horrible. That's yeah. horrible. There's no word to describe that kind of evil to do that.
It's really painful, really.
To do that really and to move on with your life yeah. like nothing has happened.
Yeah, as if nothing happened.
You know, and then you have kids as well. I can't even imagine your kids be seeing that kind of thing about you. Like, I mean, that's trauma. You're just going to traumatize exactly. those children as well once exactly. they find out that this is who their daddy really is.
Father is.
Horrible. Horrible.
The desperation to make money, really. The desperation to make money. Man.
I hope... And like I said earlier, I don't know what justice looks like or will look like in this scenario. What are the chances that she's going to get a kidney again? That's going to suit or function with her properly? Yeah. I mean, yeah. The body, her stomach and everything is already up to, so like, it's crazy. Will sending this guy to prison be enough payment for what has happened to her? I think at this point, my recommendation would be, and I understand that sometimes it's difficult because of the cost of healthcare. A lot of these people just have no choice than to resort to quack doctors or, you know, shoddy medical practices for help. My recommendation will always be look for standard hospitals, you know, where they have certain standards, and you know that. And but the question is that even the big hospitals in this country have been known to be complicit, you know, for neglect and some of these weird practices as well. So
equipment, you know, are not there.
You guys, where do you get assurance
that you're going to get, you know, it? Maybe we saw some people. Okay, the what's it called? Was it the bus? The bus crash that happened recently that was conveying staff, members of staff. You know,
yeah.
I know. When they got to the hospital, should be they were laying them outside because there was no emergency ward to.
Stuff like that. Yeah, they came up with a name for that thing. I don't know. Apparently, that's what you do when there's a mass incident and then you need to set up a temporary space to receive space to receive those casualties while you figure out how you want to deal.
How many casualties were there to even begin with? Well, how many casualties were there?
No doubt. I mean, your point is taken. You have no arguments for me on that one. But yeah, that's very sad stuff. Finally, let's just discuss on this. Obama, I don't know. It seems like someone is out to as a personal vendetta on Barack Obama, because just the same way a fly sticks to excreta, some interesting stories have been sticking with Barack Obama in recent times. There's controversy around Barack Obama's sexual orientation. He's been accused of being a gay man, and, you know, his marriage and the family picture that he seems to portray has been deemed as fake. There's been some allegations that his two daughters, Sasha and Malia, are not actually the product of the marriage between Barack and Michelle. Some people have also said that Michelle is actually a transgender, in secret, a man. Just recently, there's been a very comprehensive interview that some guy has given where he has detailed all these sexual escapades with Barack Obama way back in 2008, 2006, while Barack was still an House of Rep member. I don't know. What do you make of all this? I mean, do you think this is just a smear campaign at this time to tarnish Barack Obama's name, or are there any substance to all of this?
I've never really been a fan of Obama from the get-go. You know, I remember in 2008 when everybody was kind of losing it. Oh, the first black president. Was he even the first black president? Because his mom is white anyway. You know, I know. So I don't really understand is that not even racist? How can you just eliminate the other white, what's it called, gene?
The father is black, so
even if it is a woman, mixed. Even if it's a the mother is white or the mother is black, and then they will say black and all. Why is it like that? I mean, it's ridiculous. So for me, that aside, but what I'm just trying to say in a nutshell is Obama has never really been my cup of tea, you know, from the get-go. You know, something just strange about him, you know. I mean, when I see people, and that's me, I don't know, maybe it's just God instincts, or maybe I'm just a rebel and all, I don't kind of fancy when everybody's elevating one person like, yeah, he's the God, da da da, and all everything. The reason why I like Trump a lot was because Trump was fighting against the establishment. That's the reason why I like him, you know. But for Obama, we know what he did. Jonathan. Jonathan was removed from office because I could say removed, but I mean, it was election, what have you. But Jonathan got into Obama's black book because Jonathan government wasn't fancying the gay stuff and all. And
yeah,
promulgated the law, you know, banning gay and saying 14 years and all. And then that's where they started fighting and all. We know what they are doing with, was it Gabon recently, that Biden's team and all. That was what Obama was doing everywhere anyway. That was what Obama was doing everywhere at the time, really. So I've never really fancied him. It was during his time that they started to deify the gay stuff and all, putting their flag everywhere, you know, and all,
yeah,
and everything, you know. And America has always supported gay stuff from the beginning, you know. What Americans flag us provide them is go and be yourself, do your life and all.
Yeah.
But what Obama did was Obama was inserting, you know, this gay agenda in every of the fabric of America. And also,
so that's what confuses me.
Don't forget that he had an interview, this Larry guy. There was one interview, and the Larry was detailing everything. Was detailing where they were, the hotel that they were, how much cocaine they bought, who gave money for what. The guy was detailed. No, but they said he's a liar. People said he's a liar. He lied this, he lied that, and all and everything. But there is no smoke without fire. How much fire there is, that's what we don't know. Really.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. What baffles me is why would Obama want to hide or lie about his real orientation sexually? Because if I recall, it was during Obama's 8-year tenure that the pro-liberal LGBTQ movement gained the most momentum.
They gained traction. They gained right? the most
yeah.
traction.
Obama was the one that legalized same sex marriage.
Was like, that was what he came
one,
to the office
exactly.
to
do. That was one of the agendas that his government pushed, you know, fervently.
And Biden is an extension of Obama. That's why he's Deputy Secretary of State, something Levine. I don't even know what he is. He's a man that is wearing skirts in the office. I don't even get, seriously, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, so my point is if Obama has been very instrumental in liberating people's sexual orientations, why should he hide and continue to hide between a picture of, you know, a perfect man,
I guess
a perfect family?
I guess maybe because they know that it is not the right thing to do anyway. Because they know that it's not the right thing to do, they're just trying to and if you see Obama's family, you realize that this guy doesn't have a grip of his family. I mean, just recently we see, is it Malia or Sasha or which
I
one
think
of them?
It was Sasha, yeah.
Yeah, that was smoking just cigarette. Like, you know, I mean, the way he was dressed and all and everything, you know. And you would expect the boogeyman, the bad guy, you know, for me, I'm not a fan of his, you know. I hope whatever they said is done, I hope it's a lie. I hope everything is just, maybe it's just him and all, but I doubt, because something just,
yeah, you know, because in hindsight, right, his half brother Malik, the one that's in Kenya, right, he doesn't miss a chance to call Obama out and
something
say,
doesn't,
you know,
sit right.
He's just a pretender. Yeah. Everyone doesn't know who you are, but I know who you really are. Like, you're sick to the bones. Right. Yeah, Malik is always calling Obama out, like, straight up, without even, no apologies.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting to see, yeah, and the truth, they say, eventually will come to the light.
Don't also forget that his chef recently just died, mysterious circumstances and all.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, that was really wrapped
and
up.
If you
like,
see that guy's
quietly.
Face, you see maybe there's something about him that is gayish.
I heard he was his chef when he was in the White
from
House.
White House, yeah.
He brought him to his private residence after he left. Well, that's as much as we've got time for on the show today. We've got to wrap up, but we do hope to get your opinions about whatever topic we've talked about, whether it be an Obama incident or Kiki's comments, whatever it is. You can drop a comment on Twitter, on Instagram, or on Spotify. We'd love to hear from you. From us at The Junction, we're signing out. We're gonna catch you all next week. Till then, stay jiggy. Peace.